Blog Talk Radio.
YA. It's not just for young adults anymore. Anyone who reads it knows that most YA is timeless and ageless, and not to mention, it's good for people who have short attention spans. Celebrating coming-of-age stories, YAA celebrates all ages, genders, and genres. Join us as we shout YAA.
Hi, this is your host, Jeff Adams. Welcome to the show. I'm joined by my co-host, W.T. Prater. Will, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Excited to welcome our guest, Becky Albertalli, who is the author of Simon and the Homo Sapiens Agenda. Welcome, Becky.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you here. Let's dive right in. And get you talking about this great book. Tell the audience a little bit about what Simon and the Homo Sapiens Agenda is about.
Okay, well, when I describe the book, I like to call it a nerdy gay email love story. And then I can give you a little more detail about the plot, but I'm going to try to avoid spoilers. So basically what it's about is there's this 16-year-old gay boy named Simon who is not out to his family or friends, and the only person who knows he's gay is kind of this email pen pal named Blue, who uses the fake name Blue. And they both know that they go to the same school, and they both know they're juniors in the same high school, but they don't know each other's identities. And when the story kicks off, you have a classmate who logs into Simon's Gmail, which he forgot to log out of, and sees his email, takes some screenshots, and is trying to use that information for his own evil purposes. And so, when I talk about the blackmail plot, it makes it sound like it's I don't know, like a blackmail story, but it's really a love story, I think. And so we get the emails between Simon and Blue's pen pal. And for me, the heart of the story is just seeing them fall in love.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. The blackmail is almost the B plot.
Yeah,
story, even though it's what kicks it off in a way.
Yeah, it's I think, like, especially kind of moving forward in the story, like, the thrust of the narrative is very much, like, Simon wanting to find out Blue's identity and wanting to meet him and explore that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he definitely wants to bring it into the real world instead of just being trapped in those emails.
Yeah, he wants to make out. I mean, it's like, and reading it, like, that's what I want. I want them to make out.
So what was your inspiration for this book?
My inspiration, I get asked that, and that's a tough one for me, because, if I'm entirely honest, it really feels like this character just kind of appeared in my head. He just wanted to be written about. But I do know, like, leading up to writing the book, I had been working as a clinical psychologist, working with kids and teenagers. Also, I had kind of like an informal specialty in working with LGBT kids, gender nonconforming kids, and teens. So I do know, I was very inspired in a general sense by my work. I'm also very, very careful not to include any details about my work as a therapist in my fiction, just to protect my clients' privacy.
Mm-hmm.
I think in a general sense, it was definitely inspired by those kids.
So I want to ask, regarding the title, I mean, obviously this is a title that is going to grab a lot of attention. Can you tell us a little bit about how you decided on that particular title?
Yeah, I'm terrible at titles. The whole time I was working on this book, it was living on my computer, and the document was called Simon, and I just called it Simon. I still call it Simon. And the title for me did not come until the conversation in the book where they're talking about the Homo sapiens agenda. And so when I queried the book, it was Simon and the Homo sapiens agenda. Actually, I think there was no S. I didn't know about the S. That was just like my own error. It was corrected. So Simon and the Homo sapien agenda. And then my agent was actually the one who suggested the verses, which I ended up really liking because I think it really speaks to a kind of like, tension that Simon feels, where he does have a lot of mixed feelings about this whole process of coming out, growing up, changing. He has really mixed feelings about that. And so I think the verses, for me, really captures that. So that's my agent, Brooke Sherman, gets 100% credit for that.
Very cool. Yay on titles that are a collaborative effort.
I know, yeah. This whole book was so collaborative. Like my agent and my editor, this is like absolutely their baby too. It's a lot of people's baby, but like those two, Donna Bray, my editor, and Brooks, like there would be no book without them.
And this is your debut novel, from what I can see. How did you decide that this would be the first story that you would put out there?
I think like the simple answer to that is this is the first book I've ever written. So I didn't think that I would ever finish a book. I had been working as a psychologist full time, and I had a baby, and left my full time job, and I was like, I'm gonna give this writing one shot. I always wanted to try to write a book, and I had this story in my head, and I had this character in my head. And there were some, like fits and starts. I would say the first draft or the first beginning of a draft, like, did not have any plot at all. It was just about, like living in Simon's head and, like, what music he was listening to and him getting dressed in the morning and, like, everything else you're not supposed to include in the first chapter. This was just like the story. It was always going to be this one. And then I was amazed that I was able to get representation and a book deal pretty quickly on this one.
How long did it
take
to write?
So I just want to let everybody who's listening to this interview know that we have an informational link and a buy link on the episode page for this episode. So if you've not already gone ahead and bought a copy of this book, you need to go there now and buy a copy because it's kind of brilliant, just saying.
Yeah, it kind of is.
I want to ask, when you were figuring out how you were going to go about marketing your book, obviously there's a lot of options open to authors nowadays as far as self-publishing or going through a small house or trying to aim to get to a big house. Why did you decide to go the publishing route that you did?
For me, there was no question. I don't know that I have the skill set for self-publishing. And I did read about it, but when I queried this book, actually, I had zero social media presence. I had like a private Facebook, and that was it. I did not have Twitter. I did not understand Twitter. I think I already had a book deal by the time I got on Twitter. So, I think the idea of like doing the bulk of the marketing by myself was a little scary for me. Think I have no ability, like cover design. I'm not like a very like visual person. For me, I'm trying to go through the traditional process and get an agent. If I had been able to do that, I'm not sure what my next steps would have been. But this was almost like a charmed experience for this book. It was like a publishing fairy tale. And I'm working on my second book now, and I feel like I'm paying my dues a little bit. But Simon went to, like that, you know, he had a pretty smooth journey.
It's actually really awesome to see such a good story for a first-time author with traditional publishing. Because not only you got the hardback and the ebook out at the same time, plus audiobook came out at the same time. And even, I mean, Entertainment, the whole way I found you was Entertainment Weekly. I think the week out gave the book an A. And I'm like, I need to read this book like right now.
I was really floored by that. I loved that review. You know, my parents had a lot of issues with that issue of Entertainment Weekly.
So. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Speaking of the audio book, what was it like having? Oh, sorry.
No, I just was going to say it's pretty awesome to have your debut book reviewed by Entertainment Weekly. That Entertainment Weekly is like my Bible. I read it religiously. It's the only magazine that I subscribe to, and I read it from cover to cover. And so, yeah, that's huge, huge, huge to me.
Yeah,
sorry,
I was my publicist at HarperCollins, like Caroline Sun. She is amazing. I don't know how. I don't know how it happened that it got reviewed, but it's really exciting. I kind of find out about these things that are already happening. So there was a review in like Oprah's magazine, like O Magazine, and a couple other things. I was really excited about. I got reviewed on MuggleNet, a Harry Potter fan site. That was really big for me. It's kind of like something I never dreamed of. Like Harry Potter, you know, it's like, MuggleNet. That's the fan site I used to like read obsessively, like all throughout high school and you know college and maybe after college. So,
so I was going to ask you about the audiobook. I read the book via audio. On a road trip, and what was it like for you hearing your story performed like that?
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I'll tell you first. Like, I think the audiobook is my favorite version of the book. I absolutely love everything about the performance. So the actor who performed it is named Michael Crouch, and he is. I think he's a genius. I just think he's amazing because not only he just like completely captures Simon and all of the other characters in the book. But he just like I just feel like he's perfectly in tune with the like emotional nuances of the story, and he's just like tracking that perfectly for the entire time. I listened to it twice, and it's crazy. People, like, authors, like, are so sick of their books, like, by the time they come out. Like, I thought I was sick of it, but I wasn't too sick of it to hear, like, Michael Crouch perform that thing twice. Like, I am so grateful. It is the coolest thing in the world to hear that.
I can only imagine what that's got to feel like to hear your own words read by somebody else. I want to kind of rewind for a minute and ask you a little bit deeper of a question because I'm one of those people that I have like a crazy amount of works in progress, and I'm always trying to figure out when you're trying to come out with your first book, it's kind of that could be the one that becomes iconic for everyone. It's how you're introduced as an author to the world. When you were figuring out, you said that the book kind of just, it was there. And, you know, I just want to ask, like, I'm imagining that your mind is like a lot of authors' minds and that it has a crap load of, you know, possibilities and, you know, things like that. How did you decide that this was going to be the first thing that you were going to put out as your author self?
You know, it's so funny. Like, I do hear authors saying that all the time. And, you know, I think sometimes, you know, I definitely have, like, a touch of, like, imposter syndrome. I think, like, all of you authors do. So I'm like, am I a real author? Because I'm not like that. Like, I I'm not one of those authors who has a million ideas. I don't have a lot of ideas. if I do, they're not ideas that grab me enough that I feel like I could write a whole book about it. Like, and people, authors will talk about, like, the book of my heart is a phrase I hear a lot. I can't write a book that's not the book of my heart. Like, every book that I write has to be the book of my heart. So it is, I guess it is a very rare idea that, like, catches me in that way. And, I didn't have that process of, like, sifting through a lot of different ideas that were pulling me in a lot of directions. It was, this is the one. And then I had to really dig to find that idea for the second book.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'm just going to say for myself, I count you as lucky, because to be somebody who has an inundation of bajillions of ideas and not being able to figure out which one, it can be kind of a nightmare. I've got four different books that I have started, worked about 30,000 words on, and then got interested in another project and kind of put it on the back burner. I'm proud of the fact that I've actually stuck with my current project. I just crossed the 37,000 word goal line, and am hopeful that this will actually be the first book that I finish and put out there in the world. I've done short stories, but novels are a whole different, so you're lucky that, just saying.
Yeah, I'm impressed by that, though. Like, I just, to have, multiple ideas you're able to develop. I mean, me, 30,000 words on an idea is, you're digging into that idea. I'm hoping, I don't want the, stress aspect of that, but I'm hoping that, something unlocks for me where I become a little bit more open, I guess, to exploring the early stages.
I think you may find that. I used to be.
Go ahead, Jeff. Sorry.
I think you may find that you may unlock more as you go, because I used to be kind of a one idea person at a time.
Oh,
and
really?
The more I write, the more I find that other things just keep coming up, and I have to keep notes and separate documents about things to write later. Because I'm working on this thing right now. What I don't do a lot is jump projects. I have it, I want to do it and get it done. But I keep a lot of notes on future stuff.
That's really interesting. I don't know, if I had, another project, trying to interrupt, I don't know if I would be a jumper or not. That's hard for me to predict. I think there are times when I'm working on the second book, I want to, jump back to Simon, and I'm just I could write, I could write the prom scene fan fiction and just put it on Twitter, that is not a productive way to finish book two at all.
You might be able to use an excerpt or a short story, send it out for free on a website or whatever, and use that as publicity for the first book. So just throwing a little marketing something out there for you. Just a thought.
I know. Yeah, with my book, though, you have to be so careful with spoilers, because the love interest and the identity of the love interest is actually a spoiler. So any romantic little piece of fan fiction I write of my own book, that would only be reaching people who have already read it, or people who just wanted the book ruined for them.
So speaking about the spoiler, without being spoilery, did you always know in the process of writing who Blue was, or did you just know that there was a Blue and you'd figure that out eventually?
No, I knew who he was. As I was writing, I fleshed out. I came up with a lot of the different clues, after the fact. I kind of had an outline, but I just, went off the grid with that, many, many times. I was weaving back, a lot of the clues I was, weaving in after the fact or during, revisions. but his identity was like set from the start.
Okay.
And actually, I trained myself not to say his real name. Like, I think of him as his real name first, but I am so careful to only call him Blue online. I'm like really neurotic about not wanting to spoil people about his identity, even though, you know, definitely like a good chunk of people are able to guess it in the book.
Well, I was
going to
ask you how many people figured it out, because I, for one, did not. And we got there, and I'm like, wow.
I mean, it's so funny.
Yeah. But I didn't figure that one out.
Yeah, I'm finding I love almost everybody who reviews it, and I haven't read, or at least, you know, that I've seen, and I haven't read all of my reviews, but almost everybody mentions whether or not they guessed, and I love that. It's so interesting to me because, like, I would say, like, a third of people are, like, it was ridiculously obvious. You know, sometimes people are like, yeah, I kind of, like, took away from the story from just how obvious it was. And then you have a third of people who are like, yeah, I totally got it wrong. Like, you totally surprised me. And then maybe that other third are like, oh, you know, I kind of, like, had an idea, but I wasn't sure. And then, so I think I'm like, completely making up those statistics. Just, like, kind of what it seems like is everybody's like, oh, it was completely obvious, or I was completely wrong. I've been having a blast, like, hearing that feedback.
I think the idea that authors are broken up very clearly into these categories of plotters or pantsers. Obviously, you crossed both boundaries, because it sounds like quite a bit of this was plotted out, and then there was some of it that was pantsed. When you were writing, what is your writing process like? Do you write the book from beginning to end, or did you write little scenes? And you said you had to go back in and add some clues and whatnot. What was your how do you define your writing process?
I would definitely identify as like somewhere in between a plotter and a pantser. I did an outline on Scrivener, actually, and this outline changed a lot. Yeah, I know. It worked really well for me on Simon. I haven't been able to like get it to work for me with the second book, but it was really helpful for me just kind of keep moving forward. I did write it from beginning to end, and I didn't, you know, I think some people have asked me, did I write the email chapters, like, separately? But I didn't. I tended to, like, write the narrative and then, like, write the emails that, like, went in there. And I think for me that was helpful because it kind of kept me in the headspace of, like, Simon and just where he was emotionally at every given part of the story. But, I think, you know, there were definitely times when Simon wanted to do his own thing. He did not care what the outline said. And so when that happened, I absolutely would follow him there. And for me, that was productive for this book. So I structured it to the best of my abilities, but let the characters run the show.
Cool.
And how did Oreos end up playing such a role in the book? And tied to that, you know, how many Oreo shout-outs are you getting now? Because I know that I'm personally responsible for at least a couple of them that I've sent you.
Yeah.
When I find cool Oreo things.
I know, it's like the best part about being an author of this book, I guess. I want to say it's like a really deep symbol, but it is not. It is just an autobiographical detail in the book. Like, I love Oreos as much as Simon does, which, you know, if you read the book, you know that is a pretty intense love. And
does that mean you've lived the Oreo diet?
I will say that, you know, the Shoreo fantasy world, you know, of the, like, the land where everything is made of Oreos, and then there's like a river that goes through it, it's made of like an Oreo milkshake. that is, you know, a legitimate, like, childhood fantasy of mine. Especially, I'm a really picky eater, so I would go to summer camp and not like any of the food there. I mean, the camp had good food. I just, you know, I don't like pizza even. So I'd be going to bed hungry and
what?
Just.
Like, you don't like pizza? What?
I don't like pizza. I probably shouldn't have admitted that publicly.
No!
I know,
that
Simon likes pizza. Yeah. No, I know. I'm like a really weird eater. But, yeah, so, like, I think, like, you know, just driven from hunger, like, that was how the Oreo Milkshake River World, now known as the Shoria, came to be. And I've been loving the Oreo shout-outs. I think that's probably, other than just, like, comments on the book, like, that's probably the most frequent tweet that I get is somebody, like, sending me pictures of their Oreo desserts, and it is, like, it makes my day every single time. It is so beautiful.
Well, I was just curious. We've only got about 3 minutes left in the show, and I just wanted you to be able to tell people, they're curious, I'm sure, what your follow-up is going to be to this project. What's the next big thing for you?
I'm in rewrites, and I've been rewriting this one so many times that I don't want to give too many plot details because I'm not sure kind of what's going to stick. But it is another YA contemporary, and it's like basically set in the Simon universe. It's about, if you've read the book, Simon has a friend named Abby who moved from D.C., and so this is about like Abby's friends and family in D.C. who she left behind when she moved. So, like, maybe, you know, some familiar faces a little bit, but a different focus.
That's cool. Do you see a sequel to Simon somewhere in the future, like a specific sequel to see what he's up to?
If I ever did, it wouldn't be focusing on Simon, I think, because I just can't bear to introduce any conflict into that relationship. Like, I just, you know, I want to imagine that all they ever do for the rest of their lives is, you know, make out and whatever else comes after making out. But, I don't want to break them up. I don't want to, like, make a story out of that. So probably not a direct sequel. But there is fan fiction so far. There's a little bit out there, and it's amazing. I recommend you check it out.
I'll have to go look that up. And I think you should write the prom story one day.
Maybe one day, yeah.
So I have to ask one last question. In reading over your bio, it says that you are the former co-leader of a support group on gender nonconforming children. I know that you try to keep your professional relationship away from your writing relationship, but how did that come into, could you tell us really briefly about that a little bit?
This is a group that I miss so much. I miss them like crazy because I moved away from D.C. It's a group that I volunteered with for like 7 years or so. And, this group is just such a big part of my life, and I think they really shaped my worldview. I can't give too much detail. I don't want to give any more detail than that because, I want to protect that privacy. And I certainly never use any individual stories in my book. But I love these. I think these kids have, like, shaped, not only they've inspired the book, they've inspired, like, so many parts of my life.
Awesome. Now, I want to let everybody know, once again, you can go to writersonlinenetwork.com, and you can find the link for this episode. You can find a buy link for her book and a link to her website as well. So please make sure you check that out. And, Jeff, I'm going to let you wrap it up.
All right, Becky, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. It's been awesome.
Well, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And we'll be back next month with another episode. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you. Thanks.